So we're going to talk a little bit today about collaboration. It's a word that I think we all hear a lot, and we come from a bunch of different backgrounds, but we've all had a very collaborative year in that we've met each other working through projects in the past calendar year. So we're all going to say hi. I'm Yungna Park. I worked with Jacob over here on producing a film called Girl Walk All Day, which is screening at the film festival. It's a feature-length dance music video, and it was supported by Kickstarter, which is how we know Kendall.
And hi, I'm Kendall. I work at Kickstarter, and before I intro myself, can I ask how many people in the room are familiar with Kickstarter? Can you show me? Okay, so pretty good showing. For those of you who don't know, we're the largest funding platform for creative projects. And at Kickstarter, I work on sort of implementing our mission via real-world events. So putting on premieres like the Girl Walk premiere in New York, conceptualizing projects with artists, and sort of community outreach.
My name is Jacob, and I'm the director of Girl Walk All Day, which is a feature-length dance music film. How many people have heard of the film or seen it? Okay, a very high percentage. Cool. So it is a feature-length dance music video, and in the process of making this film, we turned to the crowd at a lot of different points, and therefore felt like we were collaborating with zillions of people. We asked for donations through Kickstarter. We sought advice and help in the filming and the dancing. From the crowd, and also asked everyone who is in the inner circle of the production team, which is a very small production team, to do multiple jobs. So we felt like we had a huge number of collaborators, or we'll say a few very strong collaborative relationships. And through the project, I met Kendall as well as Jesse, and worked a whole lot with Yungna, who is also my wife.
I'm Jesse Arrington, and for those of you who know me, you know that I know very little about film, but I do tend to do a lot of collaboration. In 2006, started a company with my two best friends called Workshop, and one of those best friends is now my husband. So I wake up every single day with my business partner, and we collaborate all day long into the night. And he's right up here. and then in 2010, you know, the three of us were feeling a little bit lonely and isolated in our office space. And so we took a studio that was next door to another group of amazing designers and developers. And that has led to this whole huge thing called Studio Mates, and I think that represents the majority of the crowd here today is a Studio Mate. we're currently about 28 desks, and all those desks are held by creative professionals, designers and developers, copywriters, that sort of thing, and we just roam free in an old factory space in Dumbo, Brooklyn. So collaboration is kind of like the name of the game there. Not professionally, I am a huge enthusiast on color and secondhand shopping. This is my favorite town for it. Thank you very much.
So I think we want to kick off by talking a little bit about that word collaboration and just trying to put a little definition around it, because we think it's a little bit in a battle with the idea of cooperation. And these are the four ideas that we're going to try and touch on today a lot, which is all about this topic of redefining collaboration. So what does it mean? The idea of transparency. So when you're working with people, what does transparency look like? How do you pick the people you want to work with? And then what struck us as this phrase, 1,000 voices, which is a lot of projects have a lot of different people giving their opinions or their inputs and sharing their ideas and feedback. How do you decide which of those ideas to work with and what to listen to? So on cooperation and collaboration, Jesse, what are your feelings about what this actually means?
Yeah, I mean, I love cooperation. Cooperation is great. I think the reason we wanted to put a little bit of a definition on collaboration is because it's a word that is used so often and it's become so ubiquitous that maybe it's starting to mean a little bit of nothing. And so we wanted to divide the idea between cooperation and collaboration, meaning that a lot of people can work together on a project, but it's not quite collaboration until everyone who's working on it is actually transforming the result and is also transformed by the experience itself. Like, that's the definition that I'm kind of working with. If it's not that, it's cooperation, and then that's fine and that's awesome. I love to have people cooperate with me, and I like to do it for other people. But unless there's that really that shared vision and people really are sharing that and they're all transforming the vision and becoming transformed by it, then I'm kind of seeing a distinction. Does that make sense to you guys, like that definition? So that's kind of where we're going to be operating today.
Jacob, do you have any other thoughts about that based on Girl Walk?
I think when we started to work on the film, or when we launched the Kickstarter campaign, then we found that people were reaching out beyond the scope of the campaign itself. People were donating money, but they were also getting in touch with us and offering their vote of confidence or sharing some feeling or offering to help shoot or dance or something like that. And so in some ways, at the very core of our project was this desire to keep it open and make it possible for people to access us and help shape what we were actually trying to do, since it somehow felt like at the heart of the music which we're using, which is Girl Talk's album All Day, which had been released only for free online. So at first I felt like in keeping everything open, then suddenly we'd sort of invited 2 million people to the party. Mm-hmm. and not had much of a doorman. And so I feel like there are some issues in trying to decide that you're running an open program and then figure out how to also kind of draw the boundaries after the fact. And that was something that in some ways, I don't want to say plagued us, but it's been something that we've sort of wrestled with ever since. It's taking initially this open door, and then trying to figure out how to employ people who had the energy to offer and sort of seize on their offerings when it made sense, but also keep everyone else a little bit at bay. And so the people we had to keep at bay were, you know, say the 550 people who donated out of our 577, who, in fact, we really just want their money and we want to send them the DVD, or we want to, you know, give them a thank you. And then there's other people who you feel like you want to elect and sort of have them rise in the pyramid.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add that I think that's something that's really common to this Kickstarter experience. You know, you found these 500 people that were willing to give you money, but for them, it's so much more than that. It's also an emotional investment, and they feel like they're sort of participating in that process. And I really like the idea of cooperation in that context, because, you know, it shows that they're part of the story and they're part of the journey, and you know, that's something that they're going to remember and tell their friends about, you know, forever and ever. But it's important to sort of delineate what their role is versus the people who are really giving you those sort of resources and that sort of help and tools.
So I think one of the ways that we tried to be really transparent, which is a great segue from this idea of including your audience but not necessarily counting them as collaborators, is to show them what your creative process is like. So in terms of the film, we did have 577 backers on Kickstarter.
Woo!
And that was awesome. And we created a blog, which is an easy way to show people a little bit of behind the scenes. But I think the greater ambitions of what that blog was not just to share what we were going through as a film, because we knew that people who had invested in the idea of the project would want to know that we were making progress. So with transparency, I think, you know, whether it's between teammates, between your project collaborators, or with your audience, keeping that open line of communication about, you know, who's doing what, where people are at, has always been a value that, you know, that has made the film process very successful. Do you have any other thoughts about transparency, just from a directing perspective or from Kickstarter?
I feel like when we started the film, I know my background is anything but in dance. My dance background is like drink number four, here we go. And I was super excited to come across a couple dancers working on a dance project several years ago who are at the heart of Girl Walk. And I looked to them entirely to come up with their dance moves, and there was a script that I wrote and then shared with them, and we'd sort of flesh out. But I looked to them entirely to come up with the dance moves and figure out how to use the street as their stage, and so from the beginning, I put a ton of faith in the dancers and kept sort of giving them the opportunity and reminding them that they had this golden opportunity to really do what they want and figure out how to actually express themselves, which means like they actually get to choreograph as well as perform, and that was a real honor for them, because generally they're used to either people telling them what to do and then interpreting it as close to the director asks, or they're used to just sort of doing things on their own and not having much of an outlet for it. But then I think at the same time, as time went on, they had this sort of carte blanche that never got revoked, but there would often have to be... I was constantly seeking their feedback and saying, well, what would make this scene better? Or how should we do this differently? Or like, what happens if you go, pretend that the lamppost is a person and interact with it? Then, because I was always seeking their advice, then I think that they... some of the dancers felt like they were always entitled to offer that advice, and that we should always try their idea. And that would be well and good, and we generally did, and very often they were right, which is super important. All the time I'd find myself having reservations, but then I'd be wrong, which is a learning lesson. But I also feel like it became difficult sometimes to say, like, well, actually, no, the light's fading, and it's over, like, we're on to the next one. And I think that in a lot of ways, they were a little bit surprised by the sort of sudden pivot in role.
What do you think is a good way to communicate when something isn't working within members of your team, based on that experience?
I think in some ways a film is, particularly for our film, where we're working in the streets all the time, and it's pretty easy to become distracted because things change in the street, or the light changes, or someone has to go to the bathroom, and the whole operation stops for 25 minutes while you look for a bathroom. It's so easy for things to come in the way that it was important in some ways to have like a papa who's sort of like, all right, well, no, this is what we're doing now for sure. This is absolutely what we're doing. And even though everyone has a lot of respect and is granted all kinds of opportunities here, then I think I did not do a terrific job at that. But as time went on, became better at saying like, oh no, this is exactly how it's going to be right now, because we only have 20 minutes before it rains.
I think one of the things that you talked about being really important throughout that process also was the open lines of communication, constantly having open lines of communication with people, and not being afraid to sense those nonverbal cues that maybe things aren't working out perfectly, and pulling somebody aside and being like, let's talk about this, and let's make sure that, you know, we're addressing your feelings, but then also maintaining the role as the leader is an important thing.
Yeah, I don't think that hierarchy... I'm not a big fan of sort of overt hierarchy, and we were talking earlier today with Kendall about how hierarchy works at Kickstarter, and it's in fact, it's a very minor...
Flat organization.
It's a very flat organization. but I think that there are moments, of course, when it's sort of action time, that it has to exist in order for your little militia to take action.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kendall.
I was just going to say, I think that's a great analogy to actually running a Kickstarter project, because it's really important. You know, there are people who do a project completely on their own and do all of the outreach and the planning and the fulfillment on Kickstarter. But there are people, especially within film or in music, who are, working as a group and collaborating, whether that's for the project specifically or just, in their general pursuits. And it's really important to sort of have these assigned roles, but ultimately to have somebody to sort of take responsibility, because you have a limited amount of time. You have, 30 days or 60 days to run a Kickstarter campaign, and it's an all or nothing goal. So if you don't, if you come up a dollar short from your fundraising goal, the no money changes hands. So it's really important to sort of make sure that everybody knows exactly what their role is and how to apply it, and that in the end, even though, everybody's ideas are important, there's one person who says, okay, this is what we're gonna do.
I think we were going to ask at the beginning, and we didn't quite get around to it, but maybe we want to ask the audience now. Have any of you guys ever carried out your own Kickstarter campaign? Awesome. And how many people came here because they might be interested in carrying out a Kickstarter campaign and want to get some input and things like that? Yeah. Okay, cool. So we just kind of wanted to know where we were from that. And I think at some points we're going to open up the microphone around each subject. And so, Yungna, you tell us if we're close to ready for questions around the idea of communication and transparency.
Great, yeah. I think what we're going to move into is actually this idea of who is on your team. Like, how do you pick your collaborators, whether it's someone that you are, launching a Kickstarter project with, or someone who you're working on, building a website with. You guys spoke a little bit about, Jacob, you spoke a little bit about meeting your dancers. How did you know that they were the right people to work with?
There are funny signs, I think, with this project for me, because I'm for someone who generally considers things a whole lot and is super analytical about things. When I first saw Anne dance, then I was immediately struck by her and knew that I wanted to do something further with her and bigger. And it took a couple years of thinking about exactly what it would be and fleshing out the idea. And really waiting for the soundtrack that I wanted to use and that I felt like could carry a really big story that I was interested in telling. And then when I heard the soundtrack, it was also the first time that I heard it that I thought, oh, this is totally that soundtrack that will take this sort of loose collection of ideas that amounts to kind of a long music video, I guess. Like, this is the soundtrack to elevate that idea from an idea to something that I was like immediately ready to spring into action. But then for the rest of the dancers, I met Anne and John at the very beginning. I met Di through Anne. I met most of the other dancers who have a considerable role in the film through them. And then occasionally through the internet and through just sort of keeping the eyes open. And people, once they knew that I was seeking dancers, then there were scores of people who were sending videos or volunteering or asking how they might be a part of it, and in general, it didn't quite work that way for me. I didn't get like a submission from anyone and think like, yes, that's the person. It all started with a personal relationship or someone saying on a personal level like, yeah, that's like you should you gotta get a hold of this person. It's gonna be great. So I found it much easier to trust in people than I've. It seemed much more natural than sort of doing some kind of casting call.
Jesse, can you talk a little bit about working with people you know, how you collaborate and divide up roles amongst your team and also with your clients that you work with?
Oh, sure. Well, that's a big one. I think choosing a team works is really based on a lot of intuition, meeting somebody and knowing if they can really do the things that they say they or that they purport to be able to do, like whether or not they can back up that thing that they propose is their main talent in life. And I think you start to get better about judging that in people as you sort of get more and more experience. But the way that I like to choose a team is to make sure that I'm always working with people who are smarter than I am, at least in their area of what it is they do. Maybe I'm consider myself the best designer in the room, but they are better at what they do than anybody else. And also, I really try to make a distinction between people who have, and I don't know if this is a slide coming up here, but people who have ego versus confidence. The big difference between ego and confidence, right? We've all experienced it. And it's a slight distinction, but it's a really big one. Because somebody who has confidence doesn't need to be telling you all the time how good they are at something, or doesn't need to always be getting the credit. If they're confident in themselves and their talent, they're willing to be giving and free with themselves and just contribute as hard and as fast to a project as they possibly can. So that's really the key distinction I try to make when choosing a team, ego versus confidence.
Do you ever have credit battles in your design collaborations?
I think designers typically feel undercredited. So I think it's more like a personal battle that you have to fight that is why it's so important to choose projects that you're passionate about, because you're not going to get credit as a designer. You're sort of this transparent thing that is promoting somebody else's idea or passion. And so that's why if you're not also collaborating in that passion and feeling really close to that, if the end goal of seeing that passion succeed isn't enough for you, then you're going to be in trouble, because credit isn't. And I think that's happening more and more in this world that we're in. If you're worried about credit, you're coming off as defensive in this internet age that we're in. That's my opinion. I think you got to let it go and let your talents speak for themselves, and your reputation will start to precede you if you're just very giving and hardworking all the time.
I think one of the differences between confidence and ego is being able to sacrifice, the credit within a project for the team or the project or the collaboration to succeed, knowing when to just say, okay, I'm going to step back, and this is what's most important for the team, or this project will only succeed and will be better for me, stepping back.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the tension there, though, comes from everyone has a sense now that they're working on a personal brand on some level. And I feel like that's a struggle for me. In some ways, not in this project, because I'm the director and the editor and the writer and the cinematographer. So my name is all
no
over
issue
those
of credit, is there?
Yeah. I feel like the total wanker who gets maybe too much credit. But I think that I'm aware of that, and sometimes working with people on things, and you sort of just want to offer the credit, because credit is essentially free. And it's the way that you feel like you can reward people for their work.
You guys are really generous with that. I remember the first time I saw the film and saw my name at the end. And I'm just a huge fan. That's really how this relationship started, was I showed up for one of the dance scenes. But when I saw my name in there, I was like, because I helped set up one of the very first screenings, I was like, what? I mean, you won my heart forever. So, when it comes to rolling the credits, give everybody credit, because you never know how that'll come back to you, I think.
And I've seen that a lot in films, too, since the advent of Kickstarter, is that now backers are being credited in films like associate producers on that level, but also just at the end. And to see your name, or to see, Kickstarter being thanked, is such a reward that goes beyond the dollar that you pledged or the $20 that you pledged. You feel like you're really part of this process, and you're going to share that with your friends, and you're going to talk about that and in those backers, and by giving that credit, you're getting people who are promoting your film far beyond that experience of having seen it once or twice.
It's such a small thing, but it goes a long way.
How do you, Kendall, think that people seeing their own names on projects that they contributed for affects how their relationship is to that project?
I think, that probably varies from one project to the next. And I don't know if there's one single answer. I think there are people who are just happy to kind of contribute and know that either it was anonymous or that, they helped make that happen. And others who maybe, like in Girl Walk, really wanted a lot more input. So I think that it just sort of speaks to that relationship between the project creator and the backer, and that it's really a two-way street. These are your fans, that they're sort of your truest fans, and they're going to stay with you from the beginning of the project way beyond. And when you launch your next project, whether it's on Kickstarter or elsewhere, those people are going to be, your immediate first, they're going to get the first announcement. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, with Girl Walk, I know we leverage collaborators in a lot of different ways, and some of those were Kickstarter backers and others were from outside. Can you talk a little bit about the different levels of those relationships you had with people that you worked with?
Yeah, there were a couple people, the core team with the film, when we'd be out in the streets working, would be, in addition to myself, was a guy named Sam Peterson, who was a good friend from college and someone I'd lived with and had total faith in. And he's also a complete sweetheart, and he could sort of massage any problems we'd ever have with locations or the police.
He was the cop whisperer, right?
He's the cop whisperer, exactly. He just, speaks into the cops here, and they give him a back rub. He's got an incredible way about him. And he was handling the second camera, and then when anything would go awry, he would just sort of make it go away. And then we had a PA who was helping with all kinds of things as well. But the dancers were really were in a way like they really had three jobs all the time. Between, like, they were acting and dancing. If there was ever a dancer who was not in a scene but was there for the film day, then they were also sort of helping critique their other fellow dancer while also carrying things and working as a PA. And they were also just like constantly informing me about what they thought would be better physical ways of telling a story. And so in a way it was like I had a little fleet of script advisors who are constantly offering ideas. And so on the inner core, it was them, and then gradually more and more, Youngna, who was helping both with the communication of the film and also on some of the shoot days, and then as we finished the film and have started to show it, then we've begun making all of these different relationships with people who can help us bring it into the world. And I think, so there's the sort of production side of it, and then as we've graduated to being filmmakers who have made a film and not just sort of diligently working on it, then there are all of these other folk who sort of come out of the woodwork and want to help arrange a screening or want to help further the mission. And in some ways, I think we have a lot of those kinds of people because the spirit of the project is very, very much generosity. But it's Youngna who's sort of interfaced with all of these people who are actually trying to show it. So maybe you want to say something about...
Yeah, sure. So I think in terms of just degrees of collaboration, there's the crew as we're talking about, but there's also what we see as relationships that we're building with, you know, film houses that we want to show it, with the public, a growing audience, with dancers who we've met along the way, with people who ended up being volunteers for the cast. And so one of the ways that we've really sort of leveraged all these collaboration is definitely inviting people to participate, but also setting our own rules for what their participation means. So if someone wants to dance, it's probably a one-day thing. It's an isolated experience. It's not going to be an ongoing relationship, because we understand also that there's a limit to how many collaborators that we can have before the project starts to fall apart. Jesse, have you had any experiences where you felt like you invited too many people to participate, or do you have any insights into like how you know when you've picked or put together the right team?
Yeah, I think that clearly defining the roles is one key part of that, because it is very easy to pass the sense of responsibility. So if you are going to invite a lot of people into the process, I think clearly defining the roles is one of the most important things you can do. We've had to learn that in our own business. But just even if we're not extremely explicit about what one person is in charge of versus another person, we can just sort of assume that the other person is going to make sure that this ball keeps traveling down the field, and we might end up fumbling. I don't know why I just use a football analogy, because I don't know anything about football. That's weird. But but it kind of, I mean, I like to use the analogy of balls a lot, because you got to keep them up in the air. it's when those roles aren't clearly defined, I think, that you start to get in trouble. So I say have as many people as you possibly can, as long as they are all awesome people who are really, really good at what they do. I try to have a personal policy of the more, the merrier. Like, don't shut somebody out just because you feel, well, I've already got 20 people. It could be that 21st person who's going to blow your mind.
One of the things that we've talked about in working on Girl Walk is the idea that everyone brings something unique to the team. So with our collaborators, you know, Jacob and I are both from a photography background. There's a lot of ways that our vision could possibly clash because we see something different through the frame. But in this particular project, we really established that he's the director with the vision, and I'm going to take on much more of event production and communications. And those were clearly delineated from early on, and it has really helped us to not overlap and sort of butt each other's roles while also being supportive. Kendall, do you see that in other Kickstarter projects or like within the team that you work with in terms of how unique roles have played a role?
Yeah, I think with projects on Kickstarter, there's no single answer to that. Again, you know, there's so many differences, and you know, people work sort of in the same space on projects. Some people, you know, there is a project called Coffee Julie's, it's these little beans that you put in coffee to maintain the temperature, and it was a pretty big success. And on Kickstarter, I think they raised something like $250,000.
Wow.
And now it's a company, and it came from a Kickstarter project. You know, it started out really small, these two guys, but they actually lived on separate coasts, and they just found ways, either through Skyping constantly or through assigning different roles within the Kickstarter project, to work together. And I think in our in our office too, it's not just about assigning roles, because we do have, you know, clearly defined responsibilities. I'm marketing director, we have a co-founder, we have a creative director, all those sort of things. But ultimately, it's also about that sort of unspoken energy that happens around the office, and I think that extends to a project as well. You know, it's about finding people that you really gel with, and you know, you have that that passion, and each person brings something different to that experience, and maybe has different skills or a different background. But knowing that you're working toward the same goal, and that the goal is the most important, I think is really, really vital.
People generally think of Kickstarter as just a platform for all of this stuff. And I'd love to hear a little bit about how you guys, because you guys also partner occasionally with institutions or with events or throw events of your own. And Kickstarter and Girl Walk teamed up for our premiere in December, and collaborated in throwing about a 1,500 person party that was open to the public and free, and something that was a pretty sort of far out idea
and super fun
and super fun.
Yeah.
So I'd love
a
to hear about
a premiere with no seats.
A premiere with no seats. So I'd love to hear about why you guys did that as an institution.
Why
but
we
also,
chose you?
Why me? Tell me. But also what kind of projects, like if you see the institution doing that more in the future, and how you mm-hmm. pick a good partner.
Yeah, well, with Girl Walk, you know, we, and this happens with a lot of projects that we kind of highlight editorially on the site. You know, we usually see them right when they launch, and we watch the video, and we pass it around the office, and people get really excited. You know, much in the same way you would do that yourselves with the outreach, but we kind of get to see it from the start. And we knew from the beginning that it was a really exciting film, and that, you know, you see by watching the trailer that there's a lot of interaction, that, you know, the music is incredibly high energy, and everybody's obviously having a lot of fun. So that was really important to us. And you know, when we select sort of projects to highlight either on the site and when we do things offline, we're looking for things that would also sort of make sense on site, and we just look for a physical space in which to sort of realize those. And here, you know, we're looking not just for something that is a great idea or executed really well, but something that shows off the framework of a Kickstarter project and the platform really well. So if the video is cool, if the rewards are really creative, and if there's a lot of sort of excitement and the idea is something different. And so, you know, in Girl Walk, we wanted to sort of translate that and find a venue to bring people in that in the real world, and not just online. Because, you know, Kickstarter is not just about raising funds, but it's also about building a community and having an experience and participating in it. And we found that Girl Walk was sort of the perfect partner. And we do similar things like that as well. We have a film festival every year, and we look for not just films there, but we also show project videos for things like, you know, for band projects and for products and things that aren't even film related. But, you know, I think that it's finding something that is a little bit different and is an experience that people can sort of can have offline as well as online.
I think one of the most exciting things about your guys' project, Girl Walk, is that the contributors got to actually see themselves in the film. And so how cool was that during the premiere, when those people who backed it and who had the opportunity to show up and be extras could see themselves on that huge screen? I just think that's one of the reasons that this project has been groundbreaking in terms of the collaboration, was that you guys really invited everybody to literally take part in that, and that's got to be different from a lot of the projects,
sure.
right? That I bet that set you you guys aside,
yeah.
I think, or showed you off.
And also because it's, you know, it's a film, I think it represents something really important in culture right now and also in internet culture. It's not something that can be bought or sold, you know, because of the soundtrack, because it's released with Creative Commons licensing, you know, you can't distribute it, you can't sell it. And so the experience of Girl Walk, both in watching it or participating in it, is that moment where you feel like you own this because you're experiencing it, not because, you know, you bought a ticket and you're consuming it, you know, in a darkened theater. You're there because you're feeling it, and it belongs to you because of that experience, and not because it's something that you can put on a shelf.
Mm-hmm. Amen, sister. Should we ask the audience to contribute some now?
Well, I guess one of the questions that we have for you guys is what do you see as signs of a good collaborator? You know, beyond being a good cooperative partner. What makes someone a good collaborator in any work environment? Okay, definitely agree with that one. Any other thoughts? What do you think? How do you think those compliments help?
Yeah, and you have to be careful with that one. Because sometimes those come with conflicting personalities. And I think that the way that you get past that conflicting personality issue with having these very different skill sets, to me, is at the end of the day, having a lot of respect for each other. And so you might not agree with what they're specifically saying, but if you respect them for their talent and what they have to offer, it makes it a lot easier on both parties, I think. Otherwise, you can get into a lot of trouble with that one, but that's when it really can excel, is when two people who are very different or five people who are very different can actually work together. That's the pinnacle right there.
And I think it's also about taking responsibility for your part in a project. I think when I've seen things go awry, either in Kickstarter projects or, you know, just in the world, it's when people start shifting blame because something's falling apart, and you should learn from your mistakes and course correct, not just say, you know, it's not my fault. It's, you know, I didn't contribute that or whatever.
I think that idea of things going awry is definitely a big one that comes up again and again in our own conversations. So what are other signs do you guys see that of things that are indicate that a collaboration might be falling apart?
Does anybody have a personal story about a collaboration that did not work that you might want to share with us? We have tons, but we'd like to hear from you. There's a mic in the middle.
I'll start because no one's jumping to the mic. I feel like in the beginning when we started to sort of just check all boxes and say yes to anyone who wanted to add something to Girl Walk, then we had a handful of people who seemed to enjoy seemed to look at it and see the way that that it was in some ways like a very techie project, like just. It was all crowdfunded. We were crowdsourcing a lot of the activities, getting the word out through the internet, blah, blah, blah. And it meant that there were a handful of tech companies who came to us and wanted to somehow integrate like their technology into our thing. We kept trying to take someone else's creation and sort of fit it within our mold because, in fact, it wasn't we, it was really me. I was flattered by the offer. People who were professionals, and I was a new filmmaker, and I thought, oh shit, you think this is worthy of your time? That's lovely. And I'd sort of carry on conversations a little bit too long and think like, oh yeah, sure, let's integrate the QR code technology, or for sure, let's let you design some web element that doesn't actually contribute anything and only adds to my work. And it was pretty hard for me to sort of have the cojones to come back to people a little bit too late and be like, actually, I've been thinking about this, and boy, it's all me and it's not you, but we're not quite right for each other.
And what do you think is the right way to resolve an issue like that, where you realize that...
Be direct. be direct, and I'm very, very often not when it comes to issues of, I don't like to hurt other people's feelings, and I think that's like the great struggle for me, and as a director, is like the huge challenge is to know that it's definitely better to be direct and a sort of respectful wanker than it is to be quiet and not own up to what you're feeling.
I think this is a good lead into our last big idea, which is, like, how do you know what to listen to? There's a lot of information swirling out there. You get a lot of feedback, you know, like from your spouse or from your roommate or from
your roommate spouse,
your roommate / spouse, and your coworkers. So, like, I know a lot of us work by looking for feedback from other people. But maybe you guys can speak a little bit to your experiences about, you know, like what is, how do you filter the good stuff?
I'm going to ask some audience members if that's okay with you. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me that you're studying your MBA now, right? Okay. So, and you're potentially thinking about a Kickstarter project. So are you thinking about taking on partners and collaborators, and how are you deciding whose voice to listen to?
Well, I collaborate with a musician back home in Virginia, but I live here, and we do a lot of songwriting collaboration together. And I think what we found is just finding somebody kind of completely opposite in musical taste, but just completely open-minded to where the other person's coming from. It's just like that expands our horizons, but as long as we're willing to see like where our Venn diagram comes together, it just helps it grow.
So the question was, again, knowing when to listen.
How do you know what feedback to listen to?
Yeah. So does anybody... I'm going to come over here to you because you're my friend who likes secondhand stores. Do you collaborate with people on your projects? And I'm playing Donahue, but... do you have any tips for us on when to know to listen to somebody or to tell, or just to like say thank you and go on with your day and not engage?
Oh, I think it's listening and then processing what they're saying. Some of it you can take and, you know, apply it to what you're doing, but not necessarily like taking their advice all the time or exactly literally what they're saying.
I think one thing that we talked about is you have to have a really strong sense of conviction yourself before you can be able to listen to what somebody else has to say. Otherwise, you'll just constantly be veering back and forth all the time. Thank you.
I think we also talked about this idea of being open.
I like it out here.
We gained an audience member. We lost a panelist.
We talked about this idea of being open to ideas constantly, and there's this tension between wanting to be open to, you know, the next person who walks through the door might be your next greatest collaborator, but also if you let too many people tell you what to do, you might lose track of your own idea. So can you, maybe Jacob, you can talk a little bit about to how you stayed open to, you know, potential ideas, but also knew when to stop getting extra feedback.
I think at the beginning of the filmmaking process, then I knew that I needed to ask for advice and help from a ton of people. I did a lot of practice with the camera work on my own. I talked to other cinematographers to learn a little bit about the best ways to just handle some of the tech side of things. But with the talent, then in a way, like they had such a strong hand in shaping the eventual form of the project that I sort of kept giving them room to work with and then having conversations about why and trying to learn from them about like what different kinds of moves or different kinds of strategies would lead to a good performance and then a better story. But then there are these concentric circles of collaboration in a way. There's like the inner sanctum, like the dancers, but then there's the people who are helping offer ideas about the website or about where we might show it in the end. Or Kickstarter backers who are in touch with, who wanted to offer some kind of opinion one way or another, and I think that it meant that I was constantly soliciting advice. I'd occasionally ask people on the street when we were filming and taking a break, like how they thought that the story, like what would you do if you were her? You know, this is what's been happening. What would you do? And I think it was really, really important for me to just keep asking people's advice. But when it came to the when it came particularly just to that sort of overall vision for where does it actually go in the end, like where does the story proceed, how does it look, then I had to take sort of everyone's advice there with really limited value. I feel like that was true also with the editing in a way that I the dancers knew their performances very, very well, and they knew the music really intimately too, and so there was some tension there where they would both John, who plays the creep, and Anne, who's the girl, we had serious conversations about how the edit should go, and they would approach me and say, like, I think that this scene can be better. I know what's there, and I want to see all my performances, and I want to listen to the music, and I want to do a review. And they basically audited me, and it was that was in a way like the tensest part of our working relationship, because I essentially I was super begrudging with it, and in both cases their advice was so right on. And it was sort of like my last wall to be broken down. And I was like, it's only because I really respect you. And those are cases where I really sort of thought I was right. And so in a way, that's
really
just
big of you to admit.
Yeah. Well, that's just a lesson for me there, where I was like, this is the sacred space for me. Like, no one can fuck with the editing, cause it'll just take too long, and I got to get it out. And I've got to make it mine. And then in the end, you know, there's like the great, you know, pearl of wisdom waiting at the heart of it.
Jesse, do you have any stories about how being open to an idea that was not necessarily yours made something, you know, better in the end?
That's the hardest thing in the world for me, because I'm really headstrong. And so learning to listen to this other people and not immediately discrediting the idea. No, I can't think of a specific story right now about that. I just maybe I haven't learned to do it completely yet. But then, Creighton, would you say that we want to come over here to my number one fan? Excuse me, sir. Can you think of an example where I didn't want to listen to anybody, or but I did, and it worked out well?
This is your big chance.
When have I listened to you that you didn't think I was going to, and then it ended up you were able to say, "I told you so"?
I don't know if I can think of any specific thing, but I don't know, something that I was thinking about is that just because someone gives advice, I think that you can say, maybe I'm not going to directly do exactly what you said, but just because I'm not doing it directly doesn't mean that it's not influencing how I'm thinking about the project. And I think that you can be, there can be some transparency around the fact that, hey, trust me, this is something that I'm kind of downloading, and then I might upload later on, or when it is uploaded, that it may look a little bit different, but you did influence it. And I think that's something that you can tell people, and they can be like, oh, cool, maybe I don't exactly see it, but I hope that he or she used it.
That sounds super respectful.
I thought of one example, and it actually has to do with you guys, but it was me being right, of course. But our studio mates put on this conference called Brooklyn Beta, and it's about design and development, and it's a bunch of super nerdy guys for the most part in a room, and I love these nerdy guys, and a lot of them are sitting here. But I came to them and I said, I think we should screen Girl Walk All Day at this web conference. And this is a movie that you wouldn't think had a lot to do with anything that these guys would be interested in. I told them it was about dance and about music and about joy. And they were like, what?
Daylight.
But they trusted me enough to do it. And it ended up totally transforming the experience of the conference, because we were able to bring in something that was so different for them. But it really touched them somewhere, and I think it transformed the whole experience, and everybody has talked about that. And now the challenge is going to be for next year, what are we going to do that's going to be this crazy thing that is going to like totally shift everybody's perspective? And everybody's actually kind of now pissed at you, the organizers, because they don't know how they're going to top it. But I just told them to just trust we're going to keep doing it.
I think Jesse touches on a really good point, which is bringing in things outside of what you think the boundaries of your own project are. So, you know, bringing a dance film into a web conference is one good example of tapping the outside. And Jacob and I talk a lot about this idea of inviting chance into the process, which is always exposing yourself, whether it's like going to parties you didn't totally feel like going to, or seeing the movie you were unsure about, or you know, having a conversation with a stranger, because what you learn or the inspiration that you get from that person might mean that they're either a collaborator in the future or they've created some inspiration in your brain that helps build your project in a way that you had not foreseen.
So true.
So maybe on that note, do you guys have any other last comments? Maybe we'll turn to some audience questions if there are any.
I'll put the microphone back. And this is your chance to peg Kendall with some questions about Kickstarter if you want to.
You can also ask directly about the film or about Jessie's work, you know, her design work. And if you'd like to ask in private, we're also going to stick around for a few minutes to chat.
Ask away.
Do you want to raise your hand? And... Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I'm Romain. I don't know if you remember me.
Ah, yes, hello.
That Alamos Soder. I told you how much I loved your movie. For me, it's an example of a perfect collaboration. Actually, it's not a movie about dance for me. We see people dancing all along the movie. It's a movie about collaboration, and that's what I liked in it. But I kind of felt when I saw the movie that it was more a succession of improvisation, you know, like, okay, we're gonna do that like that. We're gonna do hire these people. We're gonna suddenly put it on Kickstarter because we saw that maybe our first trailer worked pretty well. And so my question is, like, do collaboration needs to be like really thought and planned, or is collaboration just global improvisation and just taking opportunities, you know, when they come?
That's a great question. I think with our project, I think one thing that is genuinely unique about it is that there, at really every level of the production process, then we did turn to people and say, hey, like, there's a microphone here, and you can put a note in our box, or you can voice your opinion. So I think in general, I think very few collaborative projects are like that. I mean, generally, it is helpful to have some kind of laboratory where there's a lot of controls, and then what happens, like the magic that happens in the box, is generally the result of sort of concentrated, focused work from people bringing their talents together. I think that with Girl Walk All Day, we try to take that laboratory. It's sort of like a field trip. It's like everything just goes on outside, and there's a plan, but there's so much randomness that's invited into the process that it seemed really likely to me at every stage, from kickstarting it to writing it to filming it and editing it. It seemed really likely to me that it would not work, and I wasn't pessimistic at any point. But I also wasn't overtly optimistic.
Just low expectations.
Yeah, all the time, just thinking like, there's such a good chance that this fails. And I mean, I think the lesson there is obvious: is if you're psyched about something, do it.
Yeah. And I also think that the idea of being really transparent about your work is both new, and Girl Walk All Day is such an incredible example of that, because, you know, you have to be willing to talk about what you're doing in public so that you can invite collaboration, and so that people can, A, feel like they're a part of it, but also so, you know, you have a sense of where you're going, and you can accept that kind of feedback from your audience and from your friends and from your collaborators. I think that, you know, we have this romantic view of artists being, you know, creating in their studio by themselves or sitting in a cabin writing, you know, a novel, but, you know, on their own. When really it's about the interaction with, you know, the people around you, whether they're creative or your friends or your family, that build a project and make it what it is. And you know, being transparent and talking about that throughout the process is something that I think exists because of the internet, also because of Kickstarter, and it just enables so much more.
I think Girl Walk All Day is one of the best examples of how to do that, keeping that blog and the website that you guys have. I mean, I don't need to know you or be talking to you personally on a regular basis to know exactly where the project is. And that's how I can feel so intimate and feel like a collaborator, because I know I'll see where you guys are going next. And when it's time for me to participate, I'll be ready. Like I knew when the LA premiere was going to be, and I don't live in LA, but I happened to know that I was going to be in LA. So I invited a ton of people out to see me. And it really is about having, I think you guys do an amazing job of that site. So I can't even imagine right now putting together a Kickstarter campaign and any project about collaboration where you weren't going to build that site and be constantly updating people. That's not what you did last week, but what you're about to do next week.
And it's also just a great opportunity to invite people in from the beginning. You know, so often we go to see a movie and we wonder, you know, where did this come from or how did this happen? And with Kickstarter, not only, or any sort of social media presence that you've developed for a project, not only do you get that right from the beginning before this thing even exists, but you follow along and you see the origin from and see it through to the end.
Just to go back to your question a little bit more directly, I think there were explicit relationships that we knew from the beginning were our collaborators. So that would be the camera people, the PA, some of the dancers. There were also ones that came along throughout the process that some of the openness allowed. One example of that is there's a pole dancer in the film who shows up in a scene on the subway. And he was not a planned dance part, but it is transformative for the film. And Jacob contacted him just a couple hours before the filming actually happened on a sort of loose recommendation by somebody else. And sort of being willing to have him participate, seeing where it went, like inviting the randomness in, but then also knowing that once he was there, giving him quite a bit of direction as part of the bigger creative vision that had already been talked about. So there's a combination of things going on there where I think everyone just has to be in a position where they're ready to let that happen. And that happened again and again and again. So I think it was something that we learned worked, was to have flexibility in the process.
Thank you.
Big answers.
anybody else have a burning question before we break? Come on. Okay.
All right.
I have one more question.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it out.
Let's give it up for our biggest fan.
More general question about for Kickstarter. Do you often see some very interesting project that would deserve a high level of collaboration and involvement from people of the web, and that can't receive anything, and you would like to push them? And in that case, do you act like as a support as Kickstarter, beside featuring them, producing them, or I don't know, something else than only offering the product to?
Sure. Yeah, we generally take a back seat, and in that context, we really are sort of a platform because, you know, most of the excitement and the outreach is going to come from the project creator's own audience, right? So, you know, they have a personal connection to, it starts with that personal connection or just, an emotional connection to whatever project it is that they're trying to realize. So, you know, we do have an editorial sort of staff that looks at every project on the site, and they are going to recommend some. But what we really see, actually, that I think is most interesting, is it only takes a little bit of momentum for a project to succeed. You know, we see that about 30% of the funding goal is reached, and that's the tipping point, and those projects succeed 90% of the time. So it really just takes a little bit of momentum, and for people to, you know, nobody wants to be the first person on the dance floor. They want to join into sort of the party, right? There are so many projects that it would be really difficult to give them a push, but you know, we do what we can, and we see a lot of success. But it's really about, you know, the individuals finding their own audience and their own communities to support the project.
Sometimes the success is not necessarily defined by the Kickstarter project getting backed, because I think that sometimes the success comes from really crystallizing your idea to a point where you can put it on there, and then other people might come in and decide that they want to help collaborate with you. So I know that I've heard from Yancey, one of the founders, that there are stories where somebody might not have reached their funding for a specific goal, and so their project didn't get backed. But then a VC would contact them and say, I believe in this idea and I have the money to back this project. So it's really about crystallizing that idea and getting it out to the world. Putting it out in the universe is the most important thing you can potentially do.
And I think people are really fearful of failure, right? They don't want to fail in public. But, you know, we all fail. And I think that there's a lot to be learned in doing a project. And everybody that I've talked to whose project wasn't successful say they've learned so much, and you can always come back and try again.
Yeah, but for me, Girl Walk is a good example of not being afraid of being ashamed. For example, like when you decide to dance like that in the street in front of everybody, you can think like, oh my God, maybe that's going to do a bad buzz and we won't be able to do anything else on the web for the rest of our life. But you trusted your idea.
Yeah, we risk not being able to go back to about 50% of the venues in New York City. So, but hey, the only place we really can't go back is Yankee Stadium.
Oh, there's another question right here.
I'm going to see the film tomorrow, and I'm really excited. It already sounds like something that the Draft House should pick up and do as one of their sing and dance along kind of special events.
Yeah.
And I hope to see that since I live here in the future. But my question is for Kickstarter. I was wondering if you had any statistics or any, like, you know, NBA statistics. If you have any numbers about, like, how many projects are at South by Southwest with Kickstarter's thumbprint on it.
Well, for film, we actually have 33 projects, which represents about 10% of the films playing here at South by Southwest, which is pretty significant. And that's about the same for Sundance as well. So, you know, and in music, I mean, there are actually too many to count of people trying to get to South by Southwest and, you know, funding their tours here. I mean, we can talk afterwards about specific stuff because I think it's time to wrap up. But, you know,
there's one interesting stat about the NEA, isn't there? Like, I like that one. That's a nice one to end on. I think
it's fraught with,
sorry.
what Jesse's talking about is that, since our launch, about 3 years ago, we've seen $150 million pledged to creative projects. And the annual budget for the NEA is $146 million. So, you know, we look at this year and we imagine that we're going to outpace that, which I think says a lot for creative projects in general. You know, it's not just about organizations or sort of the, you know, the 1% of culture creators like Hollywood and major label record owners who are making decisions about what gets made in the arts these days. You know, it's individuals and people backing projects and finding, you know, your audience, and whether that's a niche like a board game or a narrative dance film. You know, it's there, and there are opportunities, and there is an audience for your work.
Thank you, guys. You've made it to the end of Interactive.